Welcome, Mark Colborne, MBE, to this HGKC Shorts podcast. First of all, thank you very much indeed for agreeing to do this. You have a very interesting and inspirational career, which I think it would be very good to share with people who perhaps are struggling at the moment. It gives me great pleasure to be able to ask you a couple of questions. By way of introduction, do you want to say anything?
Yes, first and foremost, James, thank you. You know, thank you to you. Thank you to, you know, HGKC for inviting me onto this short podcast, just to share with people some confidence, some self-belief and understanding and education based upon this unprecedented change that we've all been through this year.
Well, thank you very much. Well, starting at the beginning, I mean, you were a sort of an account executive, a sort of normal sort of person going about your business with some slightly dangerous hobbies. And then you had a serious accident, which left you with a life-threatening condition. Can we sort of start there and work forward? Because within 3 years, you were an Olympic gold medalist. Wow.
Yes. And I can sort of sit here today, James, and say that whatever I achieved and however I achieved it, it was not achieved with great luck. It was actually achieved with great health. And I mean that quite honestly. So from the very beginning, born and bred in Tredegar in South Wales, the proud son of Margaret and Cecil, and both my parents were working class. My mother was a caretaker, my dad was a crane driver for British Steel, now Tata, obviously. And great upbringing, James, no brothers or sisters, but the one passion that I had all my life was sport. Fast forward, got married at the age of 21, because I guess that's what we did back then, James, if I'm honest. And had a wonderful marriage for 15 years. And, you know, my ex-wife and I then decided to part company. We had our daughter, Jessica, who was the apple of my eye, you know, the love of my life. And what that allowed me to do in 2006 was to move to Cardiff, where I was working, as you said, as a senior accounts manager. And life was pretty cool. Life was pretty good. It was a high, big salary, company car, you know, commissions, bonuses, and just normal working class, normal guy. You know, I was never born a world or Paralympic champion. I was born Margaret's boy. You're quite right. In 2009, the 2nd of May, actually, 2009, I was a paragliding pilot and I was flying above Rossilly in the Gower Peninsula. And unfortunately, that afternoon, my paragliding canopy collapsed, just a complete freak of nature, 40 feet above the ground, full collapse. And as you can imagine, it took me probably about 2 seconds, James, you know, to fall from the sky, hit the floor. Thankfully, I landed on grass. And unfortunately, I snapped my back. So that afternoon, they say life begins at 40, James, and it certainly did for me, you know. So breaking my back that afternoon was never planned. It was never planned. And it gave me the education that change will always happen. You know, that was the curveball that life threw at me. That evening, I was told I'd broken my back. 2 weeks later, I had 6 titanium pins inserted into my spine to stabilize T10, T11 and T12. And I still have those pins in my back today. So I was left with the lower leg paralysis, a disability that was going to be with me for life. But thankfully, touch wood, my mindset and my drive and my inner warrior was not affected.
So how did you suddenly pick up this sport? Tell us more about the sport that led you to become a gold medalist.
Yes, well, I've cycled all my life, you know, since I was 6, 7 years of age. I'm now 51. And cycling's always been a part of my life. Because as I said earlier, I've always been a great advocate of health and well-being, a great promoter of wellness. And when I left hospital after 6 months of rehabilitation, left on crutches, and I'll never forget the consultant saying to my late father, look after him. He's a hell of a character, but look after him because his future may not be the same as his past. Because Mr. Inman, the consultant, knew how much I loved sport, because I'd shared it with him over that 6 month period. And I suppose looking back now, I hope he was watching the London 2012 Paralympic Games, you know.
Tell us the journey. Tell us the journey. How do you get from on crutches to becoming a Paralympian champion?
Yes, well, it all starts with the day of my accident. okay, because the Wales Air Ambulance, thankfully, airlifted me from the top of Rossilli that afternoon, and I became close friends with the paramedic who actually treated me, a wonderful gentleman called Ross Griffin. Thanked him for his services, met his family, and became, you know, quite close friends, really, because this guy saved my life. But the bottom line is, this guy saved my life. So I left hospital September 2009. I started doing some cycling in the velodrome in Newport for Disability Sport Wales. I started doing some rowing as well, indoor rowing, because I've always had a big engine, very strong, very powerful for my size. I'm not a big guy, but just naturally strong, I guess. And I'll never forget Ross Griffin, the paramedic, calling me and asking me if I wanted to participate in a charity cycle ride around Wales to raise money for the air ambulance. And I said yes, straight away. Didn't even have to think about it, James. So it was June 2010, and we were cycling around Wales, raising money for the air ambulance, and there was about 20 of us. And I'll never forget meeting this chiropractor when we were on this bike ride, and he asked me what was wrong with my legs. I explained lower leg paralysis, you know, my bum muscles don't work, my hamstrings, my calves, my feet, both my feet don't work. But thankfully, I can still ride a bike due to my quads and hip flexors, which weren't affected, which meant that I could push and pull on the pedals, you know. So after about 20 minutes of having this conversation with this chiropractor, because he asked me, how the hell was I cycling? And I said, well, I don't know, but I can. And he said, can I ask you one more question? I said, yeah, of course. He said, are you training for the London 2012 Paralympic Games? I said, no. Why the hell would I do that? And he looked at me and he said, I think you should. And that was it. It was just that light bulb moment. And I thought to myself, well, I knew London was going to happen. It was coming to town, albeit in my backyard, literally 2 hours up the M4 from Cardiff, you know. So I went home, I spoke to my parents and I said, look, I'm going to commit 100% to see if I can get to the Paralympics. Now, I was 40, just gone 41. And my dad said, Mark, come on, just go back to work. Don't be so foolish. And I said, Dad, I've got to do this. Because remember, James, London was only going to happen once in my lifetime.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, never again. So it was 100% or go back to work. So I started training, and thanks to Disability Sport Wales and Neil Smith, who was my first coach, he got me ready to then offer me or show me to British Cycling. And British Cycling were like, wow, where's this guy come from? Because he's really quick. He's really powerful. He's really fast. And I'll never forget Neil Smith saying to them, well, he's fell out of the sky.
Well,
literally,
absolutely unbelievable. But just fast forward, because there's a strange thing happened on the day of the final, didn't it?
It's just incredible, you know, because the important thing to remember here is this. I was 41 when I got chosen by British Cycling. They don't select bronze or silver medalists. They don't. They only select potential gold medalists to take them on for that 18-month period, 2 years period, whatever, to get them ready for the biggest sporting event on the planet. And the responsibility and the expectations are just huge. So after winning the World Championships in Los Angeles, which is the sad part of my journey, it was the same day or the day after when we lost my dad to stomach cancer. So my dad passed away. I was in Los Angeles. And I just had all these memories and emotions and frustrations and probably a slight of anger to then get to London 2012 to represent Great Britain, 63 million people who all want you to win, James. So the expectations and responsibilities are huge, because you're then going to be known by that race for the rest of your life.
For sure.
So that morning in qualification, a young lad from China who was in my category, he broke the world record in my event. How rude. So my coach said to me, Mark, you've got to now go and break the world record just to get into the final. Because as the world champion in this event, which is 12 laps of the velodrome, I had the luxury of riding last. So I said to my coach, come on. I said, I'm going to smash this out of the park now. I said, I'm going to get into that final, and that young lad from China, he's going to be shaking in his boots. So that morning, I broke the world record. Well, in fact, James, I smashed it by 7 seconds. So you can imagine, the World Drug Association were waiting for me with their clipboard because they obviously wanted a blood sample and a urine sample. But thankfully, because the final then was on the same day, it was 4 hours later, what that meant was that they have to wait until the final is finished and then they do their testing, urine and blood. So 4 hours later, after having some food and a sleep and hydration and obviously warming down and warming back up, it was 3:15 that afternoon. Now, this is the freaky part of my journey. I do not get to select my race number. My race number is selected for me by probably the Paralympic Committee or Paralympics GB or whoever. My race number was 42. That was my age. So that's really spooky to start with. Secondly, that afternoon, my coach said to me, right, what schedule would you like to set for the final? I said, Tom, just set it the same as this morning. I'm going to smash this out of the park again. But the 7,000 people in the velodrome that afternoon all went quiet when I stepped onto the track and, you know, got myself racked up onto the bike. You know, the bike's in the gate. The beeps go down. The gun went off. And almost all hell broke loose that afternoon in the velodrome because I guess it was 30 years in the making since I started cycling at the age of 9 and 10. And then all of the training, all of the effort, all of the revenge towards my accident, because I didn't ask for my accident. And it was just the revenge on what had happened to me for me to have my own back, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
So literally 9 laps into 12 laps, and I've come around the corner and I'm flat out, 202 beats per minute, heart rate, and I'm absolutely giving it, you know, the beans, as we call it. And I looked at the track, and literally 60 or 70 meters in front of me, I could see the Chinese rider. I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm catching him. I couldn't believe it. Literally, because I'd had my head down for literally 8 or 9 laps. So I came around on lap 10. My coach had given up on the schedule. Tom Stanton, my coach, is screaming, catch him, catch him.
Yeah.
So you can imagine those 2 laps came and went very quickly. And across the line after lap 12, obviously the gun goes off. And I looked up at the scoreboard to see what my time was. Because I felt like I was going really quick. It just felt really fast. And on the scoreboard, there was no time, James. There was just 2 letters. It just said WR. World record.
Brilliant.
I was like, wow, where did that come from? But that for me personally, breaking 2 world records in one day, and I say this, there was 9 people who helped me to break that world record twice in one day. All the way back to Neil Smith, my very first cycling coach, who mentored me all the way through my journey, my coach, Tom Stanton, the general coach, the endurance coach, the strength coach, the nutritionist, the physiologist, biomechanics, the psychologist, the physiotherapist, all these people helped me to go from good to great. And I'm so thankful, James.
Well done. Thankful. I mean, it is the most inspirational story. And of course, now you are an inspirational speaker. So when you're talking to audiences, and we're all facing a difficult time at the moment, what is your single message to them, not just to help them get through this crisis, but actually to be successful the other side?
Well, there's 2 answers here. The first answer is, we are all human beings. That, I know that sounds crazy, but when you go really deep, when you peel back the layers, when you go really deep to the psychology of being successful, you have to understand how this machine works. Because think of it as an athlete. If you're not fueling your body with the best food possible, having the best hydration, the most rest, you will not and cannot perform to the best of your ability. You can't, unless you're a complete freak of nature. You just can't. And business is exactly the same. Who's running these businesses? Human beings. So how can you be world-class in the boardroom if you treat your body like a garbage dump? You can't. And that's quite full on. But if you want to be the best you can be, you have to trust and respect this trillion-dollar machine. And I say this openly on stage. Here's a question for you, James. If you owned a 10 million pound racehorse and it was a prize winning racehorse, would you ever feed it junk food and alcohol? Yes or no?
Certainly not.
Certainly not. So why is it that human beings feed this trillion-dollar gift with junk food and alcohol? I just don't get it. I just don't get it. I've done it before in the past until I had that wake-up call. And I was like, well, who am I kidding? I wouldn't feed it to a horse or a dog. So why would I feed it to myself? Because my health is my responsibility. And that comes down to the success in business. By focusing on the process, not the outcome, and thinking logically, not emotionally. Which brings us back to the answer. And the answer is how you manage this incredible machine, which is our mind. Because remember, James, believe it or not, there's two of you in your head. This is the astonishing thing I love about human beings. We all have these two voices, the human voice and the primate voice, or as Professor Steve Peters calls it, the chimp.
So go on with that, because I mean, business leaders often suffer from anxiety or a lack of self-confidence or lack of self-belief. And I mean, you've overcome this, certainly in the sporting field. And your suggestion is that business leaders need also to do this.
100%. How can you be a business leader if you're not in full control of the machine, of the mind? That's the most difficult thing. You can be, think about this, you can be an incredible inventor of products or an incredible leader of services. But if you cannot control the machine, which is you, how can you lead from the front? You know this. You know this as a military expert in your field. You've had an incredible career. You have to lead from the front. If you thought for one moment emotionally, you'd probably go home. You would, as a human being. If you're going to get shot at, bombed at, have a sniper pointing a rifle at you, if you thought emotionally, you would be like, sorry, boys, I'm off. Because that's the human. That's the human in us. But you can overcome that by thinking logically, by being trained, by knowing how to apply those skills when they're needed to be processed in an environment of danger. Does that make sense? So it's the same in business. When you're put under pressure, if you think emotionally, you'll go to pieces. If you dig your heels in, you become that warrior that we all have, and you think logically on how to get, not out of the situation, but how to get through it to the other side, that's where the best leaders in the world can literally thrive, you know?
Well, thank you very much indeed. Mark, you've been a wonderful, wonderful guest to have on the podcast series. And thank you very much, because it is truly inspirational. And I hope that people will listen to this and follow your advice, because it's spoken from the heart and it certainly rings true to me. Thank you very much indeed for appearing on the HEKC Shorts.
Thank you, James, and good luck, everybody. Take care.